The Book of Three by Lloyd Alexander, read by Jack Skoda, Randolph, Vermont, 2024. Chapters 1 and 2. Author's Note: This chronicle of the land of Prydain is not a retelling or retranslation of Welsh mythology. Prydain is not Wales, not entirely at least. The inspiration for it comes from that magnificent land and its legends, but essentially, Prydain is a country existing only in the imagination. A few of its inhabitants are drawn from the ancient tales. Gwydion, for example, is a real legendary figure. Arwan, the dread lord of Anuvin, comes from the Mabinogion, the classical collection of Welsh legends, though in Prydain he is considerably more villainous. And there is an authentic mythological basis for Arwan's cauldron, Henwen the ocular pig, the old enchanter Dalbin, and others. However, Taran, the assistant pig-keeper, like Elanwy of the red gold hair, was born in my own Prydain. The geography of Prydain is particular to itself. Any resemblance between it and Wales is perhaps not coincidental, but not to be used as a guide for tourists. It is a small land, yet it has room enough for gallantry and humor, and even an assistant pig-keeper there may cherish certain dreams. The Chronicle of Prydain is a fantasy. Such things never happen in real life. Or do they? Most of us are called on to perform tasks far beyond what we believe we can do. Our capabilities seldom match our aspirations, and we are often woefully unprepared. To this extent, we are all assistant pigkeepers at heart. Chapter 1. The Assistant Pigkeeper. Taran wanted to make a sword, but Cole, charged with the practical side of his education, decided on horseshoes. And so it has been horseshoes all morning long. Taran's arm ached. Soot blackened his face. And at last he dropped the hammer and turned to Cole, who was watching him critically. "Why?" Taran cried. "Why must it be horseshoes? As if we had any horses." Cole was stout and round, and his great bald head glowed brightly pink.
"Lucky for the horses,"
was all he said, glancing at Taran's handiwork. "I could do better at making a sword," Taran protested. "I know I could." And before Cole could answer, he snatched the tongs, flung a strip of red-hot iron onto the anvil, and began hammering away as fast as he could.
"Wait, wait," cried Cole. "That is not the way to go after it."
Heedless of Cole, unable even to hear him above the din, Taran pounded harder than ever. Sparks sprayed the air, but the more he pounded, the more the metal twisted and buckled, until finally the iron sprang from the tongs and fell to the ground. Taran stared in dismay. With the tongs, he picked up the bent iron and examined it.
"Not quite the blade for a hero," Cole remarked.
"It's ruined," Taran glumly agreed. "It looks like a sick snake," he added ruefully.
"As I tried telling you," said Cole, "you had it all wrong. You must hold the tongs so. When you strike, the strength must flow from your shoulder, and your wrist be loose. You can hear it when you do it right. There's a kind of music in it. Besides," he added, "this is not the metal for weapons."
Cole turned the crooked, half-formed blade to the furnace, where it lost its shape entirely.
"I wish I might have my own sword," Taran sighed, "and you could teach me sword fighting."
"Whist," cried Cole. "Why should you want to know that? We have no battles in Caer Dalbyn."
"We have no horses either," objected Taran, "but we're making horseshoes."
"Get on with you," said Cole, unmoved. "That is for practice."
"And so would this be," Taran urged. "Come, teach me the sword fighting. You must know the art."
Cole's shining head glowed even brighter. A trace of a smile appeared on his face, as though he were savoring something pleasant.
"True," he said quietly. "I have held a sword once or twice in my day."
"Teach me now," pleaded Terran. He seized a poker and brandished it, slashing at the air and dancing back and forth over the hard-packed earthen floor. "See," he called. "I know most of it already."
"Hold your hand," chuckled Cole. "If you were to come against me like that, with all your posing and bouncing, I should have you chopped into bits by this time."
He hesitated a moment.
"Look you," he said quickly. "At least you should know there's a right way and a wrong way to go about it."
He picked up another poker.
"Here now," he ordered, with a sooty wink. "Stand like a man."
Terran brought up his poker, while Cole shouted instructions. They set to parrying and thrusting, with much banging, clanging, and commotion. For a moment, Terran was sure he had the better of Cole, but the old man sprung away with an amazing lightness of foot. Now it was Terran who strove desperately to ward off Cole's blows. Abruptly, Cole stopped. So did Terran, his poker poised in midair. In the doorway of the forge stood the tall, bent figure of Dalban. Dalban, master of Kaer Dalban, was 379 years old. His beard covered so much of his face he seemed always to be peering over a gray cloud. On the little farm, while Terran and Cole saw to the plowing, sowing, weeding, reaping, and all the other tasks of husbandry, Dalban undertook the meditating, an occupation so exhausting he could accomplish it only by lying down and closing his eyes. He meditated an hour and a half following breakfast, and again later in the day. The clatter from the forge had aroused him from his morning meditation. His robe hung askew over his bony knees.
"Stop that nonsense directly," said Dalban. "I am surprised at you," he added, frowning at Cole. "There is serious work to be done."
"It wasn't Cole," Terran interrupted. "It was I who asked to learn swordplay."
"I did not say I was surprised at you," remarked Dalban. "But perhaps I am, after all. I think you had best come with me."
Terran followed the ancient man out of the forge, across the chicken run, and into the white thatched cottage. There, in Dalban's chamber, moldering tomes overflowed the sagging shelves and spilled onto the floor amid heaps of iron cookpots, studded belts, harps with or without strings, and other oddments. Terran took his place on the wooden bench, as he always did when Dalban was in the mood for giving lessons or reprimands.
"I fully understand," said Dalban,
settling himself behind his table.
"In the use of weapons, as in everything else, there is a certain skill, but wiser heads than yours will determine when you should learn it."
"I'm sorry," Terran began. "I should not have—"
"I am not angry," Dalban said, raising a hand. "Only a little sad. Time flies quickly. Things always happen sooner than one expects. And yet," he murmured, almost to himself, "it troubles me. I fear the Horned King may have some part in this."
"The Horned King?" asked Terran.
"We shall speak of him later," said Dalban.
He drew a ponderous leather-bound volume towards him, the Book of Three, from which he occasionally read to Terran, and which, the boy believed, held in its pages everything anyone could possibly want to know.
"As I have explained to you before," Dalban went on, "and you have very likely forgotten, Prydain is a land of many cantrevs, of small kingdoms, and many kings. And, of course, they are your war leaders who command the warriors."
"But there is the High King above them all," said Terran. "Math, son of Mathonwy. His war leader is the mightiest hero in Prydain. You told me of him. Prince Gwydion."
"Yes," Terran went on eagerly.
"I know."
"There are other things you do not know," Dalban said, "for the obvious reason that I have not told you. For the moment, I am less concerned with the realms of the living than with the land of the dead, with Anduin."
Terran shuddered at the word. Even Dobbin had spoken it in a whisper.
"And with King Arawan, Lord of Anduin,"
Dobbin said.
"Know this," he continued quickly. "Anduin is more than a land of dead. It is a treasure house, not only of gold and jewels, but of all things of advantage to men. Long ago, the race of men owned these treasures. By craft and deceit, Arwan stole them one by one for his own evil uses. Some few of the treasures have been wrested from him, though most lie hidden deep in Anduin, where Arwan guards them jealously."
"But Arwan did not become ruler of Prydain," Terran said.
"You may be thankful he did not," said Dobbin. "He would have ruled had it not been for the children of Dawn, the sons of the Lady Dawn and her consort Belin, King of the Sun. Long ago they voyaged to Prydain from the summer country and found the land rich and fair, though the race of men had little for themselves. The sons of Dawn built their stronghold at Caer Dathil, far north in the Eagle Mountains. From there they helped regain at least a portion of what Arwan had stolen, and stood as guardians against the lurking threat of Anduin."
"I hate to think what would have happened if the Sons of Dawn hadn't come," Terran said. "It was a good destiny that brought them."
"I am not always sure," said Dobbin, with a wry smile. "The men of Prydain came to rely on the strength of the House of Dawn as a child clings to its mother. They do so even today. Math, the High King, is descended from the House of Dawn. So is Prince Gwydion. But that is all by the way. Prydain has been at peace, as much as men can be peaceful, until now." "What you do not know," Dobbin said, "is this. It has reached my ears that a new and mighty warlord has risen, as powerful as Gwydion, some say more powerful. But he is a man of evil, for whom death is a black joy. He sports with death as you might sport with a dog."
"Who is he?" cried Terran.
Dobbin shook his head.
"No man knows his name, nor has any man seen his face. He wears an antlered mask, and for this reason he is called the Horned King. His purpose I do not know. I suspect the hand of Arwan, but in what matter I cannot tell. I tell you now, for your own protection," Dobbin added. "From what I saw this morning, your head is full of nonsense about feats of arms. Whatever notion you may have, I advise you to forget them immediately. There is unknown danger abroad. You are barely on the threshold of manhood, and I have a certain responsibility to see that you reach it, preferably with a whole skin. So you are not to leave Caer Dalbin under any circumstances, not even past the orchard, and certainly not into the forest. Not for the time being."
For the time being, Terran burst out. "I think it will always be for the time being, and it will be vegetables and horseshoes all my life."
"Tut," said Dobbin, "there are worse things. Do you set yourself to be a glorious hero? Do you believe it is all flashing swords and galloping about on horses? As for being glorious..."
"What of Prince Gwydion?" cried Terran. "Yes, I wish I might be like him."
"I fear," Dobbin said, "that is entirely out of the question."
"But why?" Terran sprang to his feet. "I know if I had the chance..."
"Why?"
Dobbin interrupted.
"In some cases," he said,
We learn more by looking for the answer to a question and not finding it than we do from learning the answer itself. This is one of those cases. I could tell you why, but at the moment it would only be more confusing. If you grow up with any kind of sense, which you sometimes make me doubt, you will very likely reach your own conclusions. They will probably be wrong, he added. However, since they will be yours, you will feel a little more satisfied with them.
Terran sank back and sat gloomily and silent on the bench. Dobbin had already begun meditating again. His chin gradually came to rest on his collarbone. His beard floated around his ears like a fog bank, and he began snoring peacefully. The spring scent of apple blossoms drifted through the open door. Beyond Dobbin's chamber, Terran glimpsed the pale green fringe of forest. The fields, ready to cultivate, would soon turn golden with summer. The Book of Three lay closed on the table. Terran had never been allowed to read the volume for himself. Now he was sure it held more than Dobbin chose to tell him. In the sun-filled room, with Dobbin still meditating and showing no signs of stopping, Terran rose and moved through the shimmering beams. From the forest came the monotonous tick of a beetle. His hands reached for the cover. Terran gasped in pain and snatched them away. They smarted as if each of his fingers had been stung by hornets. He jumped back, stumbled against the bench, and dropped to the floor, where he put his fingers woefully in his mouth. Dobbin's eyes blinked open. He peered at Terran and yawned slowly.
You had better see Cole about a lotion for those hands, he advised. Otherwise, I shouldn't be surprised if they blistered.
Fingers smarting and shamefaced, Terran hurried from the cottage and found Cole near the vegetable garden.
You have been at the Book of Three, Cole said. That is not hard to guess. Now you know better. Well, if it is one of these three foundations of learning, see much, study much, suffer much.
He led Terran to the stable, where medicines for the livestock were kept, and poured a concoction over Terran's finger.
What is the use of studying much when I'm to see nothing at all? Terran retorted. I think there is a destiny laid on me, and I am not to know anything interesting, go anywhere interesting, or do anything interesting. I'm certainly not to be anything. I'm not anything even at Caer Dalbyn.
Very well, said Cole. If that is all that troubles you, I shall make you something. From this moment, you are Terran, assistant pigkeeper. You shall help me take care of Henwen. See her trough is full, carry her water, and give her a good scrubbing every other day.
That is what I do now, Terran said bitterly.
All the better, said Cole, for it makes things that much easier. If you want to be something with a name attached to it, I can't think of anything closer at hand. And it is not every lad who can be assistant keeper to an oracular pig. Indeed, she is the only oracular pig in Prydain, and the most valuable.
Valuable to Dobbin, Terran said. She never tells me anything.
Did you think she would? Replied Cole. With Henwen, you must know how to ask. Here, what was that?
Cole shaded his eyes with his hand. A black buzzing sound streaked from the orchards and bore on so rapidly and passed so close to Cole's ear that he had to leap out of the way.
The bees, Terran shouted. They're swarming.
It's not their time, cried Cole. There is something amiss.
The cloud rose high toward the sun, and an instant later Terran heard a loud clucking and squawking from the chicken run. He turned to see the five hens and the rooster beating their wings. Before it occurred to him they were attempting to fly, they too were aloft. Terran and Cole raced to the chicken run, too late to catch the fowls. With the rooster leading, the chickens flapped awkwardly through the air and disappeared over the brow of hill. From the stable, The pair of oxen bellowed and rolled their eyes in terror. Dobbin's head poked out of the window. He looked irritated.
"It has become absolutely impossible for any kind of meditation whatsoever," he said,
with a severe glance at Terran.
"I have warned you once."
"Something frightened the animals," Terran protested. "First the bees, then the chickens flew off."
Dobbin's face turned grave.
"I have been given no knowledge of this," he said to Cole. "We must ask Henwen about it immediately, and we shall need the letter sticks. Quickly, help me find them."
Cole moved hastily to the cottage door.
"Watch Henwen closely," he ordered Terran. "Do not let her out of your sight."
Cole disappeared inside the cottage to search for Henwen's letter sticks. The long rods of ash wood carved with spells. Terran was frightened and excited. Dobbin, he knew, would consult Henwen only on a matter of greatest urgency. Within Terran's memory, it had never happened before. He hurried to the pen. Henwen usually slept until noon. Then, trotting daintily, despite her size, she would move to a shady corner of her enclosure and settle comfortably for the rest of the day. The white pig was continually grunting and chuckling to herself, and whenever she saw Terran, she would raise her wide, cheeky face so that he could scratch under her chin. But this time she paid no attention to him. Wheezing and whistling, Henwen was digging furiously at the soft earth at the far side of the pen, burrowing so rapidly she would soon be out. Terran shouted at her, but the clods continued flying at a great rate. He swung himself over the fence. The oracular pig stopped and glanced around as Terran approached the hole, already sizable. Henwen hurried to the opposite side of the pen and started a new excavation. Terran was strong and long-legged, but to his dismay, he saw that Henwen moved faster than he. As soon as he chased her from the second hole, she turned quickly on her short legs and made for the first. Both, by now, were big enough for her head and shoulders. Terran frantically began scraping earth back into the burrow. Henwen dug faster than a badger, her hind legs planted firmly, her front legs plowing ahead. Terran despaired of stopping her. He scrambled back over the rails and jumped to the spot where Henwen was about to emerge, planning to seize her and hang on until Dobbin and Cole arrived. He underestimated Henwen's speed and strength. In an explosion of dirt and pebbles, the pig burst from under the fence, heaving Terran into the air. He landed with the wind knocked out of him. Henwen raced across the field and into the woods. Terran followed. Ahead, the forest rose up dark and threatening. He took a breath and plunged after her. Chapter 2. The Mask of the King. Henwen had vanished. Ahead, Terran heard a thrashing among the leaves. The pig, he was sure, was keeping out of sight in the bushes. Following the sound, he ran forward. After a time, the ground rose sharply, forcing him to clamber on hands and knees up to a wooded slope. At the crest of the forest, broke off before a meadow. Terran caught a glimpse of Henwen dashing into the waving grass. Once across the meadow, she disappeared beyond a stand of trees. Terran hurried after her. This was farther than he had ever dared venture. But he struggled on through the heavy undergrowth. Soon a fairly wide trail opened, allowing him to quicken his pace. Henwen had either stopped running or had outdistanced him. He heard nothing but his own footsteps. He followed the trail for some time, intending to use it as a landmark on the way back. Although it twisted and branched off so frequently, he was not at all certain in which direction Cair Dobbin lay. In the meadow, Terran had been flushed and perspiring. Now he shivered in the silence of oaks and elms. The woods here were not thick, but shadows drenched the high tree trunks, and the sun broke through only in jagged streaks. A damp green scent filled the air. No bird called, no squirrel chattered. The forest seemed to be holding its breath.
Yet there was, beneath the silence, a groaning restlessness, and a trembling among the leaves. The branches twisted and grated against each other like broken teeth. The path wavered under Terran's feet, and he felt desperately cold. He flung his arms around himself and moved more quickly to shake off the chill. He was, he realized, running aimlessly. He could not keep his mind on the forks and turns of the path. He halted suddenly. Hoofbeats thundered in front of him. The forest shook as they grew louder. In another moment, a black horse burst into view. Terran fell back, terrified. Astride the foam-spattered animal rode a monstrous figure. A crimson cloak flamed from his naked shoulders. Crimson stained his gigantic arms. Horror-stricken, Terran saw not the head of a man, but the antlered head of a stag. The Horned King! Terran flung himself against an oak to escape the flying hooves and the heaving, glistening flanks. Horse and rider swept by. The mask was a human skull. From it, the great antlers rose in cruel curves. The Horned King's eyes blazed behind the gaping sockets of whitened bone. Many horsemen galloped in his train. The Horned King uttered a long cry of a wild beast, and his riders took it up as they streamed after him. One of them, an ugly, grinning warrior, caught sight of Terran. He turned his mount and drew a sword. Terran sprang from the tree and plunged into the underbrush. The blade followed, hissing like an adder. Terran felt it sting across his back. He ran blindly, while saplings whipped his face and hidden rocks jutted out to pitch him forward and stab at his knees. Where the woods thinned, Terran clattered along a dry streambed until, exhausted, he stumbled and held out his hands against the whirling ground. The sun had already dipped westward when Terran opened his eyes. He was lying on a stretch of turf with a cloak thrown over him. One shoulder smarted painfully. A man knelt beside him. Nearby, a white horse cropped the grass. Still dazed, fearful the riders had overtaken him, Terran started up. The man held out a flask.
"Drink," he said. "Your strength will return in a moment."
The stranger had the shaggy, gray-streaked hair of a wolf. His eyes were deep-set, flecked with green. Sun and wind had leathered his broadened face, burnt it dark, and grained it with fine lines. His cloak was coarse and travel-stained. A wide belt with an intricately wrought buckle circled his waist.
"Drink,"
the stranger said again, while Terran took the flask dubiously.
"You look as though I were trying to poison you."
He smiled. "It is not thus that Gwydion, son of Dawn, deals with a wounded." "Gwydion!" Terran choked on the liquid and stumbled to his feet. "You're not Gwydion," he cried. "I know of him. He is a great war leader, a hero. He is not." His eyes fell on the long sword at the stranger's belt. The golden pommel was smooth and round, its color deliberately muted. Ash leaves of pale gold entwined at the hilt, and a pattern of leaves covered the scabbard. It was truly the weapon of a prince. Terran dropped to one knee and bowed his head.
"Lord Gwydion," he said, "I did not intend insolence."
As Gwydion helped him rise, Terran still stared in disbelief at the simple attire and the worn-lined face. From all Dobbin had told him of this glorious hero, from all he had pictured to himself, Terran bit his lip. Gwydion caught Terran's look of disappointment.
"It is not the trappings that make the prince," he said gently, "nor indeed the sword that makes the warrior. Come," he ordered, "tell me your name and what happened to you. And do not ask me to believe you got a sword wound picking gooseberries or poaching hares."
"I saw the Horned King," Terran burst out. "His men ride the forest. One of them tried to kill me. I saw the Horned King himself. It was horrible. Worse than Dalban told me."
Gwydion's eyes narrowed.
"Who are you?"
he demanded.
"Who are you to speak of Dalban?"
"I'm Terran of Caer Dalban," Terran answered,
trying to appear bold, but succeeding only in turning paler than a mushroom. "Of Caer Dalbyn." Gwydion paused an instant and gave Terran a strange glance.
"What are you doing so far from there? Does Dalbyn know you are in the forest? Is Cole with you?"
Terran's jaw dropped, and he looked so thunderstruck that Gwydion threw back his head and burst into laughter.
"You need not be so surprised," Gwydion said. "I know Cole and Dalbyn well. And they are too wise to let you wander here alone. Have you run off, then? I warn you, Dalbyn is not one to be disobeyed."
"It was Henwen," Terran protested. "I should have known I couldn't hold on to her. Now she's gone, and it's my fault. I'm assistant pig keeper."
"Gone?" Gwydion's face tightened. "Where? What has happened to her?"
"I don't know," Terran cried. "She's somewhere in the forest."
As he poured out an account of the morning's events, Gwydion listened intensely.
"I had not foreseen this," Gwydion murmured, when Terran had finished. "My mission fails if she is not found quickly."
He turned abruptly to Terran.
"Yes," he said, "I too seek Henwen."
"You?" cried Terran. "You came this far?"
"I need information she alone possesses," Gwydion said quickly. "I have journeyed a month from Caer Dalfil to get it. I have been followed, spied on, hunted, and now," he added with a bitter laugh, "she has run off. Very well. She will be found. I must discover all she knows of the Horned King." Gwydion hesitated. "I fear he himself searches for her now." "It must be so," he continued. "Henwen sensed him near Caer Dalbyn and fled in terror."
"Then we should stop him,"
Terran declared.
"Attack him, strike him down. Give me a sword and I will stand with you."
"Gently, gently," chided Gwydion. "I do not say my life is worth more than another man's, but I prize it highly. Do you think a lone warrior and one assistant pig-keeper dare attack the Horned King and his war-band?"
Terran drew himself up.
"I would not fear him."
"No?" said Gwydion. "Then you are a fool. He is the man most to be dreaded in all Prydain. Will you hear something I learned during my journey, something even Dalbyn may not yet realize?"
Gwydion knelt on the turf.
"Do you know the craft of weaving? Thread by thread, the pattern forms."
As he spoke, he plucked at the long blades of grass, knotting them to form a mesh.
"That is cleverly done," said Terran, watching Gwydion's rapidly moving fingers. "May I look at it?"
"There is a more serious weaving," said Gwydion,
slipping the net into his own jacket.
"You have seen one thread of a pattern loomed in Anvuin. Arwan does not long abandon Anvuin," Gwydion continued, "but his hand reaches everywhere. There are chieftains whose lust for power goads them like the sword point. To certain of them, Arwan's promises wealth and dominion, playing on their greed as a bard plays on a harp. Arwan's corruption burns every human feeling from their heart, and they become his liegemen, serving him beyond the borders of Anvuin, and bound to him forever."
"And the Horned King?"
Gwydion nodded.
"Yes, I know beyond question that he has sworn his allegiance to Arwan. He is Arwan's avowed champion. Once again, the power of Anvuin threatens Prydain."
Terran could only stare speechless. Gwydion turned to him.
"When the time is ripe, the Horned King and I will meet, and one of us will die. That is my oath. But his purpose is dark and unknown, and I must learn it from Henwen."
"She can't be far," Terran cried. "I'll show you where she disappeared. I think I can find the place. It was just before the Horned King."
Gwydion gave him a hard smile.
"Do you have the eyes of an owl? To find a trail at nightfall. We sleep here,
and I shall be off at first light, with good luck. I may have her back before...
What of me? Terran interrupted. Henwen is in my charge. I let her escape, so it is I who must find her.
The task counts more than the one who does it, said Gwydion. I will not be hindered by an assistant pig-keeper who seems eager to bring himself to grief.
He stopped short and looked wryly at Terran.
On second thought, it appears I will. If the Horned King rides towards Cad Dalban, I cannot send you back alone, and I dare not go with you and lose a day's tracking. You cannot stay in this forest by yourself unless I find some way.
I swear I will not hinder you, cried Terran. Let me go with you. Dalban and Cole will see I can do what I set out to do.
Have I another choice? Asked Gwydion. It would seem, Taran of Cad Dalban, we must follow the same path for a little while at least.
The white horse trotted up and nuzzled Gwydion's hand.
Milngar reminds me it is time for food, Gwydion said.
He unpacked provisions from the saddlebag.
Make no fire tonight, he warned. The Horned King's outriders may be close at hand.
Taran swallowed a hurried meal. Excitement robbed him of appetite, and he was impatient for dawn. His wound had stiffened so that he could not settle himself on the roots and pebbles. It had never occurred to him until now that a hero would sleep on the ground. Gwydion, watchful, sat with his knees drawn up, his back against an enormous elm. In the lowering dusk, Taran could barely distinguish the man from the tree, and could have walked within a pace of him before realizing he was any more than a splotch of shadow. Gwydion had sunk into the forest itself. Only his green-flecked eyes shone in the reflection of the newly risen moon. Gwydion was silent and thoughtful for a long while.
"So you are Taran of Cad Dalban," he said at last. His voice from the shadows was quiet but urgent. How long have you been with Dalban? Who are your kinsmen?
Taran, hunched against a tree root, pulled his cloak closer about his shoulders.
I have always lived at Cad Dalban, he said. I don't think I have any kinsmen. I don't know who my parents were. Dalban has never told me, I suppose, he added, turning his face away. I don't even know who I am.
In a way, answered Gwydion. That is something we must all discover for ourselves. Our meeting was fortunate, he went on. Thanks to you, I know a little more than I did, and you have spared me a wasted journey to Cad Dalban. It makes me wonder, Gwydion went on, with a laugh that was not unkind. Is there a destiny laid on me that an assistant pig-keeper should help me in my quest?
He hesitated. Or... he mused.
Is it perhaps the other way round?
What do you mean? Taran asked.
I am not sure, said Gwydion. It makes no difference. Sleep now, for we rise early tomorrow.